The Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129 presents Just Love, a conversation on the Church's social mission with Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the Church in the world and just love. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. We speak about those things that relate to everything that's going on in our world on one time or the other. We view them through the prism of our Catholic social thinking, our social values, Catholic social wisdom, and we try to figure out how, when we analyze them, what do we got to do to make our world more just and more compassionate? And so we kind of say just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself. And if we all do that, then our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. So right now, we're going to continue our Lenten theme. And one of the themes that we have for our Lenten time is Make Lent Great Again, 2017. Now, some people kind of don't like that because they think it reminisces a political slogan that maybe some people weren't too happy with. Well, we kind of used it because we thought it would get people's attention, but in fact, we want to use it because after getting people's attention, we want to focus people on what a great Lent would truly be. Not a lot of bravado, not a lot of bragging, but a real focus on prayer, fasting, and charity towards others. So we kind of say that if we want to make Lent great together, we got to say we got to hang out with God a little bit. That's praying. We have to discipline ourselves, and that's sacrifice and fasting. And we say that we have to help others, and that's service, charity, almsgiving. And so today, we're going to speak about those topics a little bit later on in the show with Rabbi John Lena, who is the co-founder of Base Brooklyn, which is part of the Jewish movement to kind of be a little bit more personal in the way that one does religious services, one kind of grows in their understanding of their faith. We're going to speak with him about the Jewish tradition with regard to those items of sacrificing, of praying, and of service. So that we're going to do that a little bit later on in the show. And earlier in the show, our first guest is from the American Irish Fund, and we're going to do that because what happens in the middle of these big seasons of Easter and Advent and Lent in particular, what pops up in the middle of them are some special feast days. And the big feast day that pops up during Lent is the Feast of the Annunciation on March 25th. But in the New York metropolitan area, because our cathedral is named St. Patrick, our archdiocese is dedicated as a patron to St. Patrick, we make a big deal out of St. Patrick's Day, and we have a big parade up Fifth Avenue, and it's one of the largest parades in New York, if not the largest one, and one of the largest parades in the entire country. And we begin the day with Mass at St. Patrick's Cathedral to draw attention to the spiritual values and the roots of this day, that it's not just about a parade, it's not just about festivities. And I even kind of remembered the word. I'm going to ask our first guest to make sure I'm saying it right, raising sconces to all the good things that we celebrate on that day. So what we're going to do early in our show, we're going to speak with Kyle Clifford, who is the Vice President of Development at the Ireland Fund, which is one of the most successful philanthropic fundraising organizations in the world, which is dedicated to raising funds to support programs of peace, reconciliation, the arts, culture, education, community development throughout Ireland and for the Irish abroad. So that's what our show is going to be today. Before we go to our first guest, Tom, you got any news notes you want to share with us?
I do, Monsieur. You know, we obviously here on Just Love, we kind of look all around the world at various places on how to make the world more just and more compassionate. And one place that we're particularly we try to put a focus on is in Iraq and in the Middle East, because, so much of modern history, today's history, just kind of circulates around that. And just this past week, Monsignor, Chaldean Patriarch Louis Raphael Sacco attended a forum at the Iraqi city of Sulaymaniyah, that was organized by the American University of Iraq. And what he did there was he called the Iraqi people to kind of copy the way, if you will, we do politics and religion here in the West, and to kind of do that in Iraq in order to be able to build post-conflict in Iraq. The conference was called Beyond ISIS, Ending the Cycle of Violence and Towards Durable Solutions. And there, the patriarch spoke of the time when Mosul, hopefully, please God, will be liberated from the ISIS jihadists, and that the Iraqi people will be faced with a difficult task to reconstruct the political, social, and religious fabric of society. And at that time, he said, it would be the duty of all Iraqis to build a state of law, a modern democracy and country founded on the principles of citizenship and not on predefined power relationships between minorities and majorities of ethnic and religious basis. To do this, he said, it would be necessary to distinguish religion from politics, religious institutions from state in institutions. And what he said was that the Iraqi people could learn from the West. He said that we must separate politics from religion as they do in the West. Otherwise, he said, there would be no future in Iraq at all. So we wish them luck with that, and we do hope that wiser heads prevail, like the Chaldean patriarch, and we wish them well with that.
Well, you know, I'm glad that the patriarch spoke up on that topic. Clearly, the position that he articulates is one that would not be shared across the region there, and I do think there would not even be kind of a shared for all that position among all of the players who are trying to bring peace there. But I do think that perspective being raised is a very, very important one, difficult one to deal with, because in many places people don't like to necessarily borrow ideas from other places, and they kind of think their own ideas are good. I don't think that's a very open position, but it's a reality. I mean, in the United States, we kind of have a feeling like that. We don't want other people telling us what to do. We have our own traditions. And so, obviously, we know from sad experience, we know from the reality, we know from some of the conversations and negotiations that have gone on in recent years that certainly there is a hesitance in parts of the Middle East to borrow anything from the West. And I think one of the reasons for that is because the West is perceived to be a Christian place, and where, you know, at least in the perception of the people in the Middle East, they would say, well, we mix Christianity with American democracy, and that's kind of the way we do it. And so in the Middle East, why not mix Islam with the political culture over there? So I do think what the Chaldean patriarch said is very important. It's a very important contribution to the debate, and a very important contribution to kind of helping to figure out how we make the path forward. So I'm glad that you brought that up, Tom. It's not without controversy, but I think those are the ideas that we need to kind of think about, evaluate, see how we can learn from them. So now, since we are in the week of St. Patrick, and let's go to our first guest, Kyle Clifford, the Vice President of Development for the Ireland Fund. Kyle, thank you so much for joining us on Just Love in this St. Patrick's Day week.
Monsignor Sullivan, thank you so much on behalf of the Ireland Fund for having us on as your guest. And of course, a very happy St. Patrick's Day to yourself and all your listeners. Delighted to be on the show.
Great. Thank you so much. So listen, Kyle, first tell me a little bit about the Ireland Fund. What's it do and what's it about? And just not the whole history. Give us a little of the thumbnail sketch of it.
Absolutely. Well, some of your listeners may have Irish heritage or in some way are connected to Ireland. And what we do is we offer and provide that transatlantic bridge. We're a philanthropic organization that connects people across the world. We're in 12 countries to projects back home in Ireland that they may wish to support. And so what we offer is the capacity for people to support a wide variety of projects, be it in peace, culture, education, or community and development, and so that they're basically giving back, and they're doing so in a meaningful and lasting way. Our network was set up 41 years ago, and to date we have supported over 3,200 projects, and raised over $550 million. And can I add, we support projects in the 32 counties of Ireland, but in addition to that, the Irish communities across the world. So if any of your listeners care to support projects, be it in Ireland or in Irish communities here in the United States, we'd be delighted to talk to them.
Hey, Kyle Clifford, the Vice President of Development, thank you for sharing a little bit about the Ireland Fund. Now, you know, you brought up the 32 counties of Ireland. You know, I think you're right. Probably a number of our listeners do have Irish roots and they have a good sense of Irish history. But listen, this is a good opportunity to bring a little bit more awareness to people. And I'm probably going to learn something from the answer to this question. So give us a little bit of a sense. You know, we've heard about Northern Ireland. We've heard about the southern part of Ireland. There's a relationship with Great Britain. There isn't. Give us just a little bit of the brief overview of the geography and a little bit of the political alignment of Ireland today.
Absolutely. Well, in Ireland, you have the 26 counties that are fall within the Republic of Ireland, and then you have the six counties of Northern Ireland that are currently the executive for what is known as and referred to as the Northern Ireland Assembly. And obviously, the six counties still fall under the jurisdiction of Westminster. And the Ireland Funds specifically set up 41 years ago and was a group of individuals who were concerned about the troubles in the north and wanted to use philanthropy as a way to encourage peace and support reconciliation. So thankfully, 20 years on, we have made a lot of gains. And one of the core pillars of which of how we supported peace was through supporting integrated education. This is a real example of where philanthropy, giving back, can have an impact in society. Back when we were formed, there was practically one or two integrated education schools where people from different communities were educated together. So we co-funded in 1981 the first school that had only 28 students. But fast forward today into 2017, there are now 65 schools where students from different sides of the community together, and they have 22,000 students currently in what is Northern Ireland in integrated education.
Kyle, just for the sake that we have listeners throughout the country, when you say both communities, you mean the Protestant and the Catholic Christian communities, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And currently support among parents in Northern Ireland runs at about 80% for integrated education. So that's where you would have children, teachers and parents from both sides of the community, Catholic and Protestant, coming together in the local schools.
And so that is a tremendous advance. And again, you know, for our listeners in the United States, I think we might find that a little bit strange. I mean, maybe we've heard it read in the paper, because when we think about, you know, mixing things together, we often in this country think of race or ethnicity. Sometimes we think of class. We don't usually think of it as things mixing in that way among people of different Christian religions. I think it's just a very different experience.
It's a different experience, and I have to say a lot of progress has been made in 20 years, where there's some fantastic community leaders who are bringing both sides of the community together. And, you know, the Ireland Funds has very proudly supported initiatives like the 174 Trust, Cooperation Ireland, and Coramila, which are all focused on bringing people together and having dialogue and doing so in a nonpartisan way. That's really important. The Ireland Funds were nonpartisan, and it's a real example of how private philanthropy can have an impact and, as one might put it, move the dial in society. So we're removed from politics, and that's really important. So individuals who might see virtue in supporting integrated education, we have a wide variety of different projects that we could offer and engage with them on. So it's exciting. Now, you know, reconciliation is ongoing and we still need to keep that investment. It's only 20 years ago that the Good Friday Agreement was signed in the North. And so we've enjoyed peace and economic prosperity on both sides of the border. But we need to maintain that, secure it, and do so. What greater way of doing it than giving back to through philanthropy.
Kyle Clifford is the Vice President of Development for the Ireland Fund, and we're speaking about what one of the, I would say, one of the largest international philanthropies in the world is doing to make Ireland better. So, Kyle, let's get a little specific now. I know you mentioned the Integrated Education Project. Give me one or two or a couple of your favorite projects that the Ireland Fund is currently funding.
Well, that's actually a tough question. There's a lot of social innovation coming out of Ireland, and what's really exciting is the capacity to support a project in Ireland, see its scale, and then replicate some of the learnings there and bring them to the United States. But if I was to pick a few, Music Generation is an amazing partnership that we have with U2, and that was set up in 2009 because, to our surprise, and it's amazing to hear this is the case in Ireland, but back then, Ireland was rated the lowest in the OECD for music tuition. So Music Generation, in partnership with U2, was set up specifically to try and increase the level of access and music tuition for young people across Ireland. So we embarked on a partnership with U2 and the Irish government in a very unique public-private partnership to establish a series of music generation centres and music tuition across Ireland. And I'm happy to report, as of this year, we've about 38,000 students across the island in 100 programs. And most importantly, what's exciting is it's created about 330 jobs. But it's a brilliant example of where philanthropy can engage with government. And this is a project which, when completing its phase two, through the support and leadership of Taoiseach Enda Kenny, the Irish government has agreed to support and continue the program. So philanthropy has supported the program, got it going. And now then we will be able to hand it off over to the Irish state. So that's a great example of a very unique project.
Kyle, let me ask you a little bit of a devil's advocate question. Some of our listeners might be saying, hey, boy, they're doing all that great work, but they're here in the United States. Why don't the people in Ireland, don't they have a stay-at-home Ireland Fund? Why aren't they raising the philanthropy in Ireland to support some of these good projects? Why do they need people in other parts of the country? And didn't I hear there was this Celtic Tiger thing going on, and where there was a lot of money, the technology stuff? So isn't there a lot of money in Ireland? Why do they need this money from abroad?
Absolutely. And I think, Ireland is one of the most charitable countries in the world. But it's also a country with a certain level of resources, and public expenditure can only go so far. And there is a multitude of other projects that we are supporting, even in Ireland and outside of Ireland. So, for example, people can support, if they wish, they could support some of the Irish projects we're operating here in the United States, be it the campaign for the new Irish Arts Centre in New York or some of the immigration centres. But as well, in particular, philanthropy is a great way for people to celebrate their heritage. And for a lot of our network, they're very proud of their Irish heritage. And for them, it's really important to stay connected. And through giving back and through being philanthropic with some of these projects, they are supporting and maintaining that connection for future generations to come. And there are many Irish and Irish Americans here in the United States that really give thanks to the people that went before them and feel that in some regards they want to give back and celebrate that. So, public expenditure and its capacity to meet all our needs in Ireland, it's always going to be challenged, no matter what the economic progress that we've made. But in addition to that, it's a great opportunity for us as a community to stay connected. And so a lot of Irish Americans would engage with the Ireland Funds for that purpose, to engage with projects and stay connected with their heritage and their roots.
We're speaking with Kyle Clifford, the Vice President of Development for the Ireland Fund. And we're just speaking about the great work that the Ireland Fund has done in raising significant dollars that then go to fund programs primarily in Ireland, but in communities throughout the world. You know, Kyle, you mentioned the areas that you kind of like, the social innovation stuff. Is there a particular project you want to highlight in that area?
Well, in social innovation, there's a project called Social Entrepreneurs Ireland. And specifically, what they do is they try and identify individuals who have a concept that can really make some difference in society. And they may have a brilliant idea. They just don't know how to get it up off the ground and how to scale the project and how to execute that. So we've supported Social Entrepreneurs Ireland to bring together around 204 social entrepreneurs. And we've invested about 6.7 million in their projects. But most importantly, what we've done is supported Social Entrepreneurs Ireland in providing them with a series of training and mentoring programs. And so that gives individuals the capacity to have a really entrepreneurial idea that can have an impact in society, and they can engage with the Social Entrepreneurs Ireland support to try and see if they can get that off the ground and make it active and have an impact. And as a result of that, they've had incredible impact. They've impacted their projects. When you look at their projects in total, it's impacted about 520,000 people across Ireland and created about over 1,000 jobs.
Give me your favorite one.
That's a really innovative project.
Give me your favorite one.
My favorite one?
Yeah.
Personally, I have a soft spot for Music Generation. I think it's a fantastic project, and I think when you meet these children, and I think what greater way of celebrating our heritage and St. Patrick's Day, and likewise all year round and through music, arts and culture, and to see these young people coming together creates a sense of community. Of course, there's multiple, there's variety, loads of evidence that what music tuition does for a child's education level. And I think it's really exciting what Music Generation has achieved in this very short space of time.
I guess I was trying to focus you a little bit. That sounds like a great project, but it wouldn't really be a social entrepreneur project or a social innovation project, would it?
Well, it's a project that is, well, it's an innovative project. Oh, you're referencing a specific project in Social Entrepreneurs Ireland?
Exactly, yeah.
I would say, I do apologize.
Yeah. No. That's a great project, the music one. I just wanted to hear a little bit of a different type.
Sure. Well, Food Cloud is a really innovative concept that was developed by Social Entrepreneurs Ireland and two very young entrepreneurial individuals from Trinity College Dublin looked at the level of food waste that was taking place in Ireland and thought, how can we use technology to essentially help food rescue? And so they created this really robust, fantastic app that allows both the supermarkets and individuals to connect. And so it links, using technology to link food banks with supermarket chains, and they have a few partnerships with some of our supermarket operators in Ireland. So two very young people who had an idea to use technology to impact and address some social need.
Kyle, did that strike a chord in your heart because of your previous connection with City Harvest?
I have to say it does. I worked and volunteered previously. It did indeed. And having worked with DePaul Ireland for the homeless services in Dublin, I think it's an amazing project.
Good. Hey, Kyle, thank you so much for taking the time in St. Patrick's Day week to kind of share with us the good that's going on. One of the things I've come to learn is kind of just a little bit of history, that two of the oldest Irish-American organizations in Boston and New York, that when they were founded, among their primary missions was to help the needy. So at least the tradition in this country, going back to the very first groups of Irish who came here, when they came together to form associations, they wanted to make sure that helping the needy was forefront among the other things that those organizations did. And so it seems to me that the Ireland Fund is a proud successor to some of those smaller initiatives, a century or so ago. And I just want to thank you for taking the time to be with us.
Not at all. Thank you so much. And again, a very happy St. Patrick's Day to all your listeners.
Oh, I got to ask you one thing. One thing, because I can tell you're not from County Bronx. So I've been asking everybody. So how do I say cheers? Because seven people have told me seven different ways to say that word that begins with an SL. How do you say it?
That's right. Well, it's Schleunter.
Okay.
Slointe.
Okay. Now that's a new one.
Well, we'll just have to meet in person and raise a glass.
I think that's a good idea.
That's the solution.
Okay. So Slointe or Schrantje or whatever. Anyway, thanks for being with us. Okay.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Kyle Clifford, Vice President of Development for the Ireland Fund. We're in the middle of Lent, but we're also in the middle of St. Patrick's Day week, so that's why we spoke with Kyle Clifford. Let's take a break and just love. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and we'll make our world more just and more compassionate. This is the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, our weekly conversation about the church and the world. Just love God, just love neighbor, just love yourself. Our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. This is the third week of Lent. Actually, you know, I did some counting, Tom, and I counted, and basically, today, you know, this week, if you begin with Ash Wednesday, and so here's my decision for this year, Tom. The Sundays are staying in, so I'm counting the Sundays as legitimate days of Lent.
Okay.
And here's why I decided to do that. You know, if you call something the first Sunday of Lent, the second Sunday of Lent, how could you say they don't count for Lent?
No, I agree, Muncie. Yeah. It never made any sense to me either. Right, I agree with you.
So the way I'm doing my calendar this year is I'm doing it backwards. So I began on Ash Wednesday, and that was the 40th day, then 39th. And whatever. So what I basically decided, give or take, okay, we have three sections of Lent.
Oh, okay.
So the first part goes up to St. Patrick's Day, okay, March 17th. The next part goes to April Fool's Day.
Oh, okay.
And then you go to Easter. So you kind of got, give or take, 2 weeks, 2 weeks, and 2 weeks. Not exactly. So if you're kind of pacing yourself through the Lenten stuff, okay, you know, we're at the point where you got a third in.
Oh, that's good.
So you can kind of declare victory for the first third or not. But if you haven't, but you got two thirds left.
Exactly.
So I think it's not bad. So I'm up for this. So
I would say me too, Monsieur. That makes me feel better because, as you said, you know, if you kind of stumbled a little bit, at least you got two-thirds to go that you can make right.
So what are you doing?
I would say for myself, I gave up pizza, which I like pizza, so I haven't had pizza since, and I haven't had pizza. I've actually been very good.
Well, that's what giving it up means.
Yes,
Tom.
It's true. Okay, you know? But I haven't broken down, you know? In other words, usually on a Friday.
We got it. No. You haven't done it?
I haven't done it.
Good.
I've been very good.
You got a third under your belt. You get credit. Great.
Doing good.
Okay. So we got any news?
Yes, we do, Monsieur. I would say, you know, one of the things, obviously, there's big news in this, I would say, in the past week, is the House of Representatives has introduced a bill to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. And in response, a number of Catholic entities have written about this. For example, the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops wrote to Congress calling health care a vital concern for nearly every person in the country in a letter that they sent on March 8th. And then they also pointed out that discussions on health care reform have reached a level of intensity that is making open and fruitful dialogue very difficult. Even while most people recognize improvements to the health care system are needed to ensure life-sustaining model for both present and the future. Given the magnitude of importance of the task before us, we now call for a new spirit of cooperation for the sake of the common good. The main provisions of the new House bill include a couple of things, Monsignor. One of the things is eliminating the mandate that most individuals need to buy health insurance and putting in its place a new system of tax credits. They're looking to expand health savings accounts. They're looking to repeal the Medicaid expansion and transitioning to a per capita allotment, they call it. They're looking to prohibit insurers from denying coverage or charging more people money for patients based on pre-existing conditions. And they're also looking to cut off funds for Planned Parenthood clinics. So in response, the bishops are calling for a level of cooperation to this. And obviously, they're talking about this is a very vital concern for the country. So I know people will be keeping their eyes on this for the weeks and months to come.
So, Tom, thank you for bringing that up. And why do we care about this on Just Love? We care about it because our fundamental Catholic belief is that the dignity of the human person requires that there be access to good medical care. And good medical care in the world we live in means somebody's got to pay for it. And in the world we live in, that usually means it's done through health insurance. And health insurance for a majority of the people in the country comes where you work. You get it as one of the benefits of working there. But even though the majority of people do that, that's not for everybody. People can buy it privately, very, very expensive. Other people don't have enough money to do it, and therefore they are covered by various programs. If you're elderly, there's a senior citizen program, which we call Medicare. And there is a program if people don't have enough income, there is Medicaid. Now, a little ironic, which most people, well, I shouldn't say that, but some people don't know, and sometimes in political debate, people ignore the fact, even though Medicaid is for people who are below a certain level of income, the fact is that a lot of, if not even most of, the funds are used by elderly who sometimes people think, well, aren't they covered by Medicare? Well, not so much. Because if you have, if you go into a nursing home or long care facility, most of that is paid by Medicaid. And so it's a little bit of a mixed bag that we have there. So why do we care? We care because it's a basic human right. Some of the policy issues we have a concern. Our concern is, quite frankly, that everybody has access to health care, that since insurance is an important way that people get access to health care, that we think there should be as much coverage of the population as possible. Now, when we get into the issue of, is a tax credit better than a subsidy? Is the question of, should insurance be able to be purchased across state lines? All of those issues are issues which we can have a real good policy debate about. And I mean, the reality is, why was there a mandate that people had to do health care, which was held constitutional by the Supreme Court? The reason was very simply because the more people who pay into an insurance pool, you spread the risk around, and therefore it's not quite so expensive. So there are a lot of real policy issues there. But from our Catholic perspective, we can debate the policy issues all that we want and we need to. What our thrust is to say, hey, human dignity means that people should have access to health care. the way that we have access to healthcare in this country is primarily through insurance, and therefore we need to have a system that doesn't drop people from health insurance, but expands that as much as possible. And then we got to leave it to a lot of the experts, the analysts, to figure out how you structure that so that it is financially solvent in order to do that. So that's what the challenge is, and that's what we're going to be looking at to make sure that we kind of cover populations, especially those who are vulnerable. Let's take a break. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just love. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just, and it will be more compassionate. Join us when we come back in just a couple of minutes on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just love. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and more compassionate. Well, we are in, for us Christians, the holy season of Lent. But the notion of holiness and seasons in which we pay a special attention to our spiritual values is not unique to the Christian tradition. And so during Lent, we're seeking to explore with other traditions how they view kind of holy seasons and some of the values that we consider to be dear to our Lenten season, namely prayer, fasting, almsgiving, or as we kind of have said in our trying to make Lent great again this year, the first part prayer, hanging with God, second part sacrifice or disciplining myself, and the third part of almsgiving or charity is helping others. So today I'm just delighted that we have here in the studio with us Rabbi John Lena, who is from the base community in Brooklyn, who is a rabbi ordained out of the Bronx. And I always like people out of the Bronx because that's where I was born. So that's why I like the Bronx. But He's not a native New Yorker. He actually is from Wisconsin, and he's going to be a great guest because he used to broadcast and be a fan of the Badgers in Wisconsin. He was a radio host himself, so I'm delighted. Rabbi Lena, thanks so much for joining us on Just Love.
It's a pleasure to be here, and as I said, it's wonderful, wonderful to make my, I think, 10 years since I've been on the radio.
Wow, that's great. So tell our listeners, give us a little sense. How'd you wander from the lakes of Wisconsin to the New York metropolitan area?
Great question. Actually, in college, I majored in film studies.
Okay.
And I was thinking I was going to be the next Steven Spielberg.
And you're not yet?
As you can tell, I have not quite made it there.
Oh, well.
And I was looking for something to do, and my parents actually suggested that I should take a year off before I jump into anything, and they said, do whatever you want, and I spent that year in Israel, actually, and one thing led to the next.
What were you doing in Israel?
I was studying Torah.
Okay.
Jewish texts.
Ah, that's great. Now, I've had the privilege to go to Israel twice. Once on a pilgrimage with some volunteers from one of our Catholic nursing homes who wanted to go see some of the holy places there, and they invited me to go as their kind of moderator or chaplain, and it was just a very, very delightful trip. And then probably about 5 years ago, I went on a mission with the UJA Federation, the Jewish Community Relations Council of New York, and was a wonderful trip in which I got to understand a little bit more about some of the social, some of the political dynamics that are going on in Israel in this era. So I was really, really pleased to be able to visit Israel in both of those ways. So did you learn something when you studied the Torah?
I learned quite a bit. Okay. I actually learned what I didn't know in many ways. Growing up, I was raised conservative and went to Jewish day school. And I was really told what Judaism should be for me. And once I got to Israel and started learning, I quickly discovered that I have my own destiny here, and I can really access these texts, the holy texts that are thousands of years old, and make them relevant for me personally.
And so we can talk about something else a little bit later. So I actually say, you know what I love about doing this show? I meet such interesting guests, and I learn new things. I didn't even know there was a rabbinical school in the Bronx.
There is. I should say it's in Riverdale, which, well, I know is not quite the Bronx.
Let me tell you, though,
in the Bronx.
Let me tell you, though, if you're going to have a rabbinical school, it's going to be in Riverdale.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so it's in Riverdale. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That is great. So when were you ordained?
I was actually ordained a year ago, so I'm a fresh rabbi.
Okay. That is newly minted.
I'm newly minted, indeed.
So I think, you know, for many of our listeners, we kind of think of rabbis associated with a synagogue and kind of presiding over maybe weekly services there. But you got to have a little bit of a different take on this, don't you?
Absolutely. A younger generation,
right,
who I mostly work with, people in their 20s and 30s, are deeply seeking some sort of religious meaning or spiritual experience. They do not find the same relevance as my parents and grandparents did in going to synagogue. Praying, that type of service just doesn't connect to them. So the community that my wife and I have built in Brooklyn is really centered around studying, learning Torah, acts of kindness, so volunteering, and just opening our house up to meeting people. I do a lot of pastoral work, meeting people at coffee shops, bars even. So it's really a pulpit that leaves the synagogue and is in the streets in many ways.
We're speaking with Rabbi John Lena, who is a rabbi of a specifically kind of smaller, a little bit of a new, different, more familiar type of ministry and congregation in Brooklyn. Let's go back a little bit in history. You know, the Christian tradition, Jewish tradition, in some ways, the home has a very, very, probably even a more important religious role in Judaism than in Christianity, doesn't it?
The home is the most central, I would say, sanctuary within Judaism. Every single holy place starts with the name Bait, which means house. So Beit Knesset is the name of the synagogue. The Beit Midrash is the house of study. So everything, really, all our holy places in many ways are rooted deeply in the idea of what a home is.
And so even I think for, you know, for many non-Jews, when if they said, well, you know, name a Jewish holy day, they'd probably say Passover.
You know,
coming up. And Passover, I'm going to say my thing, and you correct me if I'm wrong. It's probably more important what happens in the home for Passover than what happens at the synagogue.
Absolutely. I mean, the Seder, which is actually the most attended Jewish event out of all the holidays. So that
really
includes more Jews, for example, sit down at a Passover Seder than go to synagogue on Yom Kippur.
Wow.
And the Seder, of course, is
More fun.
It's more fun, right? You get to drink 4 cups of wine.
And you can talk.
You can tell a story, schmooze.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yom Kippur, you're fasting
right,
and listening to a cantor. So yes, right, you're right. But if you want to believe that the Seder, Passover, is really the centerpiece of the Jewish calendar, which in many ways it is, that takes place in the home.
Right.
So most families, there's no rabbi, there's no cantor. The educational, the whole religious experience is done by the family.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I'll tell you an interesting story, which may be a little bit blasphemous. It will be blasphemous.
Okay.
But let me tell the story. Good friend, colleague, invited me to a, and it was a, not everybody in the family, in the gathering was Jewish, because it was a marriage between a Christian and a Jew, and so it was. Yeah, so I'll tell you the funny story about it. So one of the children, one of the people there, kids, was being brought up Christian, and so when it came time to ask why this
Manish Tana Halayla Hazeh, why is this night different from all other nights?
This kid, out of nowhere, just picks up and says, because in 2 weeks, I'm going to make my first communion from tonight. So they had to re-ask the question.
That's okay, because the Passover Seder is actually supposed to not just have Jews. It's actually...
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, we begin the Seder, actually, by saying it's the first page of the Haggadah, which is the book used to go through the service, which is you open the door and you say, anybody who wants it, come on in.
Ah.
And it's really because the story in many ways is about recalling that we were strangers.
Right.
And we went from slavery into freedom. So in many ways, we want to replicate that experience for what is happening now.
Yeah. Now, you know, in our Christian tradition, we probably would say that what is so much at the center of our core belief, we probably wouldn't use the word home. We would use the word family. And obviously, there is a strong connection, but I mean, our core belief is that an individual grows, they reach their potential with the loving support of a family. And I think, sadly, what we would say right now, one of the things that is problematic in many parts of the world is that families are not functioning in the loving, supportive way that really we would pray and we would hope that they would. So that's a little bit of a challenge. So listen, here's what I want to focus on specifically with you. In our Christian tradition, we do 3 things in Lent, 3 main practices, as I said, the praying, the sacrifice, and the helping others. How do those virtues, values, practices, where do they fit in the Jewish tradition?
They fit right in fact. Those 3 are a perfect ingredient, so to speak, that creates a special holy moment. The first act usually is an act of charity, in the sense that giving to somebody in need is actually a prerequisite for any spiritual encounter that's going to happen. So before almost any Jewish holiday, it starts with an act of kindness. So let's take Passover, which is the upcoming Jewish holiday. In just a couple of days, weeks, right before, the first law that you're supposed to do is to make sure all the poor people have matzah, the unleavened bread. And before Rosh Hashanah, there is a special drive to get money to people who are less fortunate. And I could go through almost every Jewish holiday. It's deeply, deeply connected to the notion of charity, which is, the Hebrew word is tzedakah, which is actually a very different translation. Tzedakah really is rooted in the word of justice. And so first you have to do an act of charity. And even before Jews pray, a guy goes around with a tzedakah box, a charity box, and you put coins in.
Now, I've heard the phrase used in various places. Is it the same concept of repairing the world?
Tikkun olam. Yeah, this idea of repairing the world. Exactly. Yeah. And it's really rooted in this idea that before you can have your own encounter with God,
right,
you first need to take care of the other person.
Because the notion of justice and the notion of injustice, injustice means there's something disordered in the world that needs to be repaired or put into order. So the notion of justice, repairing the world, and we also believe that while charity is good, justice takes precedent. Because you can't do something nice to somebody if the base is out of order.
Absolutely. I mean, when you use charity, that means that you give when you feel like it.
Right.
Right. If you see a homeless person on the subway, you say to yourself, okay, today I'll give him a dollar. But in Judaism, the idea of tzedakah, which is rooted in this idea of justice, it's not whether you feel up to it that day. You're commanded to do that.
Right.
And the rabbis say that if you turn a blind eye to somebody asking for money, it's as if you committed idol worship, which I can tell you is like the worst thing you could possibly do.
Well, and again, where the traditions come out differently, but when you look in one of the great passages from Matthew's gospel, the scene of the last judgment, there are some really not so nice ramifications in the Christian tradition if you don't help a neighbor in need, if you don't welcome a stranger,
absolutely,
if you don't provide food.
No commandment is mentioned more times in the Hebrew Bible than the idea of helping a stranger. 36 times.
Pretty good.
Pretty good, right?
Yeah, pretty good. Okay, what about the praying part?
So the praying part, as I said, is secondary to the first. So the first thing you have to do is make sure you take care of somebody else in need. Then you have the prayer aspect. Prayer in Judaism is fascinating in many ways. The word lehit palel, which is in Hebrew, can be best translated as judging oneself. So I think generally when people think of prayer, they think of asking God for something. Please, God, give me this, give me that. The Jewish idea of prayer is much more introspect, and you want to see within yourself flaws. And it's really not, I mean, there are aspects of asking God for things, but a big part of it is really working on yourself and correcting parts of yourself.
So then let's move then. Where does the notion of, in our tradition, we would say sacrifice or fasting, where's that come in?
Great question. So obviously in ancient times, the idea of sacrifice, you know, slaughtering animals, the rabbis substituted that for prayer.
Okay.
But obviously fasting is a part of Judaism, most notably Yom Kippur. You know, everybody knows about Yom Kippur, where Jews fast for 25 hours from sundown till when the stars come out the next day. But the fasting is not a way to afflict somebody. It's more as connected to prayer, this idea of really looking within ourselves. The rabbis say, if you fast and you don't give charity and you don't change yourself, then it's a worthless fast. It's stupid. It accomplishes nothing at all.
Is there fasting in other times during the year?
There are four what we call minor fasts, which are connected to days of tragedy within the Jewish calendar. So the big one is Tisha B'Av, which is usually in the summertime, which marks the destruction of the temple. So that fast is more a way of your fasting as a way to lament, but certainly not as a way of punishment or even sacrifice.
You know, it's interesting. Your notion of prayer is very intriguing to me, because I would say from our Christian tradition, the way I kind of say it is prayer is basically communication with God. And I oftentimes say is that it should get us out of ourselves, because I'm not quite as smart as God. And so I really want to communicate more with God than myself, because I want to know what God thinks. And so what I kind of say is that prayer's always got to be two parts. And if you don't know what to say, that's fine. Shut up and let God talk. Maybe God's got something to say to us, and we should just be a little quiet and rest in God.
Absolutely. I mean, Judaism also has a practice of meditation as well, of just being silent, and through that silence, hearing God. But it's also an idea of that the Bible says that each person is created in God's image. So we take that very literally, that within ourselves are right. parts of godliness. So this idea of looking into ourselves is simultaneously connecting to God.
Exactly. And I've used that too. And one of the wonderful things about religion, it's so deep, it's so mysterious, that sometimes you can say the opposite and you get to the same point.
Absolutely.
You do. Hey, listen, we're out of time. I thank you for being here. I hope you come back another time.
I would love this. This was the highlight of my week.
Well,
for sure.
so all I want to know, just one team, as the old Badger sportscaster, who's going to win?
Well, if they were listening to me in Wisconsin and they heard me not say the Badgers, they would be disappointed. But actually, I don't think they have a great team this year.
Okay.
Look, I would say UNC. From what I've seen, they look pretty good.
Okay.
What
thank
do you,
you
think?
I'd like to see Villanova.
Okay.
Okay. But anyway, so listen, Rabbi John Lena, Base Community Brooklyn, thanks for being with
thank
us.
Thank you.
We
it was
shared
a pleasure
tradition.
To be here.
So thanks for being with us on Just Love. And we're trying to look at this Lenten season from the point of view of the different traditions. It is a Christian season, but there's so many parallels in other religious traditions. And so we explored them today. Thanks for being with us on Just Love. Just love God, your neighbor, yourself. Make our world more just and more compassionate. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, The Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Listening to The Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.